Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to this. On the finest of sporting Sundays, it is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby doesn't take itself all the game too seriously. As always, I'm here with the man who Mark Atkinson doesn't know, Phil Logan. How are you, Phil?
Who?
Exactly. The anonymous man. Hang on. Do you know who... What's the point? Do you know who Mark Atkinson is?
Well, that's what I mean. Who?
Exactly. One all.
I did enjoy... I listened back when I was travelling back from Oslo. I really enjoyed your chat with Mark Atkinson.
He's pretty cool.
He's very cool. He's a very funny bloke.
Yeah.
I'm not that surprised he doesn't remember me, because like he mentioned, he was only at Sedgley for a matter of weeks. Although in the game that Tim referenced to him, the Cornish Pirates game, he actually put me in for a try.
Did he? He still doesn't remember you.
He assisted a Largan try in that very game that you were talking about.
Oh dear.
So disappointing.
And we're not joined by Tim today because presumably, well, he's in a festival up in Edinburgh, presumably off his face on either Ket or Meow Meow, or maybe both.
Yeah, mind altering party drugs.
I hear he's hanging out with Will Greenwood.
Pretty sure, for the record, none of that is happening.
Oh yeah, sorry. Which one?
The mind altering party drugs, the Ket, the Meow Meow. None of that is happening.
That is definitely not happening.
He does have major Wi-Fi issues, though. So
yeah,
he's unable.
You would if you were smacked off your face and you can't handle your phone. That's what I assume he's up to anyway. No, he's at... Is it the Edinburgh Fringe? He's found some events. I'm not sure. It's some play about the moon landings not happening, so... Anyway, I'm sure he is very much enjoying that.
Absolutely. Mm. I'm sure it'll be comparable to my weekend quaffing champagne in Oslo as well.
Exactly. I tell you what, mate. Let's not start on a wrong note, but let's anyway. I'm so hungover today.
I'm okay, actually. You did enjoy yourself a little bit more than me yesterday, though.
I was very drunk. And I continue to be very, very drunk. Which didn't really help, actually, because today has been one of the most amazing days of sport I can remember in literally years, particularly for a non-rugby weekend.
Yeah. And the level of sport taking place across England today with the British Grand Prix, topped by Wimbledon,
yep,
which was topped by one of the most amazing sporting games I've ever seen in any sport. The England-New Zealand ICC Cricket World Cup final was just astonishing.
I'm not even a cricket fan. And I started watching... I only saw the start of the England innings, so I didn't see any of New Zealand batting. Mm. And it just slowly grew and grew and grew. My word, Ben Stokes has got some absolute kahunas.
Oh, God. Stokes and Butler. Because they were the two. Stokes and Butler, after England... They lost Roy, they lost Bairstow, they lost Root, they lost Morgan, and those two, when the chips were down, they dug in.
Stokes in particular was just magnificent.
They were incredible.
I know everyone says it's like a pressure situation. It didn't even look like he was feeling the pressure. It just felt like, yeah, just give me the ball.
Just another day.
Yeah.
So that was incredible. And then the drama towards the end of the England innings with Stokes caught on the boundary, but Bolt steps over to give it six rather than out, which was a mirror image of Bolt winning the game against the West Indies when he caught Carlos Brathwaite on the boundary to win the game rather than lose it in this case. And the Stoke six that wasn't a six, that was two, then hit him as he was diving in to go for four overthrows. I mean, that, to level the game...
It's truly remarkable.
It was astonishing. And then, I've never watched a super over before.
Didn't even know it existed.
No, neither did I. That was unbelievable. That super over was the most exciting thing I've watched in years, in years, in years, in years. Honestly, I was thinking about this. The last time I got that excited by a single sporting game was when I was dancing around the room in 2015 when Japan beat South Africa.
Yeah, maybe.
My heart was pounding. The adrenaline was going. It was it was amazing.
I don't know. Sale Bath this year was pretty good.
Was that the one with 35 reset scrums?
The 63. 6-3 game.
That
was probably up there. But, do you know, there's something very All Blacky about the New Zealand cricket team. And it's not their talents.
And not their kit.
It's not their kit. Their kit is dreadful, isn't it? Like,
I love those kits. I love the England, the light blue with the stripes on the shoulders.
Well, actually, let's just talk about the New Zealand kit. When they wear it with black trainers, it just looks so peculiar, doesn't it? It looks like they're a swimming pool attendant or, you know, doing the way the council dress their employees in weird outfits. It just does not look cool.
They're going emptying bins from public areas.
Dreadful, in fact. But there is something quite All Blacky in just how organised they are. Like, they're such a cohesive unit.
And because in the semi-final and the final, I don't know if you watch much of this, but they've not posted particularly big scores. So they've been defending narrow leads, and their team unit, their bowling attack, and Kane Williamson, who's been a super batter throughout the tour, but he has organised their fielding incredibly. So they're an impressive unit. And England as a team, because England, so like Bairstow and Roy, who were sensational in the semi-final, and Morgan and Root, who finished the job in the semi-final when England hammered Australia, they all kind of flunked today in the batting. And it was only when Butler and Stokesy came in and steadied the ship. God.
Stokes, bloody hell. He can hit whoever he wants now. Do whatever he likes.
Ah, God, those boys are going to have a good night tonight. They're going to have a good few days.
Well deserved as well. Oh, can we not replace Australia with New Zealand for the Ashes? Far more interesting.
God.
Anyway, I guess we should link this to rugby. Is there anything that we could learn from this Cricket World Cup which we can get into about rugby?
Well, what do you reckon the chances are of having a repeat final, as in England-New Zealand, in the Rugby World Cup 2019?
Well, not high. I don't think England are getting out the pool stages. And sometimes, well, maybe they are. I don't think they're going to beat Argentina, which means the France game is going to be a complete and utter lottery. So, very slim. I think the chances are it's going to be between New Zealand, South Africa, France are my three teams that are going to go for it. The final's going to be of those three. Which, you know, isn't a massive call, is it? It's a list. You know, three of the Tier 1 nations.
Yeah, three of the Tier 1 nations. France, I'm not so sure about France. And another on the whiteboard.
Yeah, I think they're going to go well. Talking of the whiteboard... Marcus Smith has been added to training camp, right?
He has. There's five players added today.
Right, talk me through this then.
So
this is only announced, what, a couple of hours ago? Recording on Sunday?
Sunday evening, there was an announcement from the RFU to say they're having a training week this week in Bristol. Then the following week, they head to your beloved Treviso. Ooh. For a hot weather or a heat intense camp. So they've added five players to the squad. And three of those are from Quins. So Mike Brown, Dom Brand, and Marcus Smith, Magic Marcus, who is going to be, according to the whiteboard, England's starting fly half by the World Cup.
Yep.
They've also added Tom Dunn and Ollie Thorley. So you've got...
Let me see the point. Okay, first of all, the cost of this must be astronomical. I mean, people overlook this, but they have to be paid for training. It's not just games that they get paid for. They get training cash too. The food bill. I mean, people might think I'm just messing around here. I'm not.
An extra five steaks? When you're cooking for 35 people.
But like when Saracens went over to the States, I think the food bill was 80 grand.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me.
It's like feeding racing horses. Like, it's just little things. And then you've got to get extra flights for everyone and extra accommodation. And, you know, when you add it all up, the cost of adding five extra squad members must be bloody enormous to an already enormous squad.
Well, that's actually the thing. The squad is small. So the squad up to this point is only 35 players. Mm. Now, admittedly, there's three who are injured players who are training or rehabbing with the squad in Cruis, Mako and Jack Noel. But 35, considering it only gets cut down to 31, if you compare that back to the Stuart Lancaster squads about this time, he had 50-odd blokes in.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Staggeringly wasteful.
And so I'm quite happy with the squads. I mean, part of me thinks these five players that have been added in, part of me thinks you're either making up the numbers for training games and that kind of stuff, or are there a few niggles in the squad? Because they will have been pushed hard. We've seen an injury elsewhere in Johnny Sexton, who's reported to have a dislocated thumb, which will keep him out for 6 weeks.
Mm, pretty tricky, that one.
Which is, he should be available for all the games, but he won't be training properly for that period of time.
Doesn't matter, does it?
With Johnny, it doesn't matter too much.
It's like, if Tom Brady doesn't go to pre-season for Carcassonne, whichever Tom Brady you want to talk about.
If Tom Brady doesn't do his 23rd pre-season as a professional athlete.
Who cares, you know? So, okay, that's relatively interesting. But there are people in there who, I wouldn't say making up the numbers, but, you know, they're not likely to go to the World Cup. And there's people excluded who you think would be likely to go to the World Cup.
The only one that's in there that I think is unlikely, or was previously in there, that I think is unlikely, would be Lewis Ludlam.
McConaughey? Is he still
there? Possible. He is there. It's possible, because you only had, with McConaughey, prior to Thorley and Mike Brown getting added, you only had six outside backs.
Yeah.
So, and you would normally take maybe five or six, depending on if you've got one who can also cover other positions.
Willie Hines?
They only had three scrum halves in the squad.
They've only ever had three scrum halves in the squad.
Yeah, and Eddie Jones, Japan squad for the last World Cup, he only took two scrum halves. Mm-hmm. So Willie Hines is possible not going, but it does depend which fly halves you go. As you rightly pointed out on the pod last week with Mark Atkinson, you've picked three paired halfback pairings.
Yeah.
So it depends. If Danny Cipriani can move himself up the order, maybe Willie Hines also moves himself up the order.
Hmm. Interesting.
Now, another interesting bit of this squad was, so there's three players who've been announced to be doing, I'm reading a direct quote here, do specialised strength and conditioning work separately off-site.
I know what it means, but like, what does it actually mean?
Well, it's an interesting one because Eddie Jones on a couple of occasions has referenced just how fit all the players have come in, what good condition all the players have come into this squad. He said that the fittest he's seen them. He specifically referenced their body composition, or the average, the overall body composition of the squad was the best he's seen. But three of them aren't up to scratch, this looks like. Now, do you know which three that is? Have you seen this?
Three are not up to scratch.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen it, so this is going to be... So who would not be up to scratch?
Now, a couple of them are...
Like Tom Dunn or someone. Something like that.
No, because Tom Dunn's just been added back in, but not Tom Dunn. So a couple of them, I'll give you a clue, a couple of them have been injured for long periods this season.
No idea. Oh, okay, Marcus Watson.
Nope.
No, sorry, not Marcus Watson. Anthony Watson.
Anthony Watson is one of them, yeah. And Tim mentioned it on a podcast quite a while ago when he first came back towards the back end of the season. There is a noticeable difference between his right calf and his left calf.
Oh, yeah, massive difference.
Like a real noticeable difference. So he's doing some work, which...
Calf raises.
Might be some calf raises.
Single calf raises.
It might be just he's not actually played very much rugby in the past 12 months. So he's in there. The other one who's been injured quite a bit?
Oof, Underhill, something like that?
Underhill.
Oh, is that good?
Yeah. And Underhill always looks like a physical specimen. But again,
is enormous in real life.
But he's not got the miles under his belt. So I can see that. And then the third one, he had a couple of little niggles, but he's played most of the season.
Who on earth?
A guy who's not got the conditioning.
Billy?
Nope.
I know.
Sippers.
What?
Sippers has been singled out. So there's nothing more than that. That one line, so Cipriani, Underhill,
from the squad.
Watson will do specialised strength and conditioning work separately off-site.
Bizarre.
So Cipriani is the other one. Yeah.
That is bizarre. I mean, I don't even think he needs to be in good shape full stop, personally.
Cipriani is an interesting one for me because when he was a kid, well, I say a kid, he burst onto the scene at 18.
Yeah, yeah.
But in his early days at Wasps, in his first stint at Wasps, he was talked about as the fastest guy in the squad.
He's rapid. He's absolutely rapid.
But you don't see it anymore. You very, very rarely see it. He's, all of the kudos that he's been getting for the past couple of seasons is because of his decision-making and his distribution skills, which have been top-notch.
He does have a running threat, though. But, yeah, you're right. The people that talk about it, don't they?
You rarely see it. And it's been a number of years, actually, you've rarely seen it.
You do see it in some respects. I just think he's so well-balanced that he hides it well. It's like Ronaldo and heading. Ronaldo's an amazing header of a ball. No one talks about it because he's so good at everything else, too. And I kind of think that's what happens with Danny Cipriani. His main job is to pass the ball. He does his main job so well, you don't even notice it. But, you know, I've seen some clever little... you know, two-on-twos, when he's passed the ball, received it back, and then you know, turned on the gas. So okay.
I remember him scoring a try for the Melbourne Rebels, so you're going back 6-7 years, something like that, where he did a show-and-go from the halfway line and gassed the whole way in. I've not seen that, probably since he returned from Oz.
Yeah.
So I think he hasn't... maybe got that. But it's an interesting one anyway, because Eddie Jones clearly prioritises that trait, as in the strength and conditioning trait.
So the thing about Eddie Jones, apparently, now I need to get this the right way around. His theory, I think, is along the lines of you can get any player and then make them massive via gym and strength work. And he's always thought that, mostly because he is fundamentally a very small man who used to play hooker.
So I've never heard him make that statement.
I got that from a journalist who covers Japanese rugby called Rich Freeman.
Rich Freeman, yeah.
So in fact, you can go back and listen to that. It was on Rugby Dungeon.
Ah, okay. Bit of insight there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the news from England's camp. You referenced England not getting out of the group. There has been one game, although unless you're going to drop down to Currie Cup, there's been one game of senior men's high-level rugby this week, and it comes from Wales's group, Wales and Australia's group.
Ooh.
And that is...
Fiji.
Fiji. So, Fiji, looking at this, it might not actually be right this, but looking at this, Fiji are the fourth-ranked team in their group, or were at the time the fourth.
Okay, so Wales, Australia, obviously 1 and 2.
Georgia, and then Fiji, Uruguay.
I think Fiji are going to be an absolute handful.
Now, Fiji, they've comfortably beat what is not the strongest Maori All Blacks team. But
a few names in there.
There's a few names, like more than a few names. Every Maori All Black team will be good. So yeah. They travelled to Fiji and were handily beaten, 4-2. By what is a very good Fiji team, and a Fiji team that's got a lot of time together, and a phenomenal amount of talent. Some of the names in that team are astonishing. So,
Tuis overplayed. What position?
14.
Really?
Yeah. So Radrada didn't play, but they've got Radrada to come in there.
He'll go to 13.
He'll go to 13. Yeah. He's a special player.
Who else was in the Fiji team that we might know?
Let me get it up. Nakarawa played in the second row. Valami Mata in the back row.
Bill Mata.
Right. Yeah. To you. Yeah. Bill Mata. Let me get a couple of the other ones up there. But it was a handy team. And a very handy win. Yeah, 27-10. Stunning the Maori All Blacks. And Maori All Blacks, who had a couple of players who will be pushing to get back to or into the full All Blacks team, guys like Reid Princep, guys like Akira Iwani, and Nathan Harris, full All Blacks in their own right, and Triple T, the young scrum half.
Mm.
Don't ask me to pronounce his actual name. Triple T will do.
Triple T's absolutely fine, mate. Absolutely fine.
So, other guys for Fiji, Semi Kunitana, or Kunatani.
Yeah, I know.
Ben Volavola, Filippo Nakosi, Livani Bottia, La Rochelle.
He's an incredible player. Was he playing 7?
He was playing 12.
Of course. Who is the guy who does a similar thing for Clermont?
The guy who's played back row and a tiny bit of... He played on the wing a little bit, I think.
He's an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. So anyway...
Anyway, him. Okay.
So England have got problems in their group, or England and France have got problems in their group with the strength and depth in Argentina. Wales and Australia shouldn't be taking this Fiji team too lightly. And Wales have famously lost to Fiji in the World Cup before.
And Samoa.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
Western Samoa, of course.
Remember in 2007, the Wales-Fiji game.
God, I remember watching that game in Colombo Rugby Club. And we had one guy who was English, and that was incredibly wealthy. In fact, you know, if you were to build a stereotypical English person for a Welsh rugby club to hate, it would be this guy. In fact, you might even know him. Do you know Will Blackwell?
I played with his brother, Tom Blackwell.
Right. Yeah. Tom was lovely. Will, right, was like the stereotypical arrogant Englishman that went to private school. And as soon as Wales lost, he got to the door. He was going, yeah! Like, celebrating, so on and so forth. About five of us chased him outside. And he jumped in his car, locked it. And the only way that we got him out of his car is we pretended to pour water into his fuel tank of his brand new Mini or whatever he was driving.
The other guy who had that stereotypical Englishman hating Welsh attitude, not someone I've met actually, but who was renowned for it, was Ollie Cohn.
Oh yes,
who ended up playing, getting one appearance for Wales.
He's incredibly English.
Incredibly English, Bristol born and like defender of England, kind of that mentality, and then ended up playing for Wales.
So I think Fiji are going to be more than handful. They've had a good win recently against France, and the longer they're together, the more dangerous they're going to be. They got together, didn't they, like 2 or 3 weeks ago?
They've been together. Yeah. Well, they will have picked up their French stars at the end of June or whenever the French top 14. So they will have had at least a few weeks together now, and they've got these back to back fixtures against the Maori All Blacks before then playing in the Pacific Nations Cup, where they'll play against Tonga, Samoa, Japan, USA, and Canada. Mm. Which will effectively be their warm-up games. So that's actually quite a lot of rugby to play in a short period of time.
Yeah,
so
it is.
With not the enormous... They've got the talent, but they've not got an enormous amount of depth. You've got to hope they don't get any injuries. Mm. But if they avoid the injuries, with that amount of time together to gel as a squad, they will be a real handful.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. We've got the Champions... The Rugby Championship coming up. Why can't they get a better name for it than the Rugby Championship? Such a garbage name.
TRC 2019. The Rugby Championship. We have got that coming up. We'll do a little preview of that towards the end of the pod, shall we? First round of games are next week. The other rugby that's going on this week. So there's been the Olympic qualifying sevens.
Yep.
Which England men and women have now qualified for.
Very good.
I think Canada qualified last week or 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So that's good news. So England have qualified, so GB can compete.
Imagine if GB couldn't compete. Like, four rugby playing nations gone.
Gone, wiped out. So there's that. And there's the Women's Super Series, which in 19 minutes' time, the final game, or the deciding game...
Is that on TV anywhere?
It's been on World Rugby's website.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
We can watch that in 19 minutes' time.
I might watch that. I might not as well, but I might watch it.
England, who are... thus far unbeaten. They've won 3 from 3, although only just snuck past a very good French team midweek. So England play New Zealand, who've only lost one game, and England are 3 points ahead. It's basically...
What is the Super Series? Is
winner,
this?
Winner wins.
Is this what the World Rugby would like the men to be doing?
Which is
everyone together every year and then play a sort of quasi-World Cup.
No, I think it's a bit different to what was proposed of the men's, partly because there's only 5 teams.
Yeah, but the principle's similar.
But I guess the principle is similar, that it's creating a more meaningful annual competition with where the best teams all play each other.
Yeah. Strikes me the Super Series, its main function is as some sort of totem for journalists to whinge about, because I've not heard anything complimentary about it outside of the first game. Other than that, it's just been people whinging about facilities and pitches and all sorts of stuff.
So there was a lot of positivity, like you say, going into it.
Yeah, loads.
And then some reports came out about the state of the pitch, the changing facilities, the stadium or lack of stadium, the training facilities, the condensed games, because they're playing this, they're playing it's a five-team tournament, so each team plays four games over. It's
only a couple. In LA, though?
It's only a couple of weeks. It's somewhere west coast of
I'm
USA.
I'm sure it's LA. Let's just look that up. Look that up a second. But you know, with egg chasers, what I tend to do is I tend to look around the globe, or more to the point, I tend to look at places that I want to visit, like New York or wherever it may be, and then try and find rugby. So find the destination first, and then overlap it with some rugby, and then, you know, we can go on a rugby trip, and, you know, yada yada yada. Great. Obviously, I've always wanted to go to California, and obviously always wanted to go to LA. And looking at the LA rugby scene, there doesn't seem to be anything which happens there. So having a major international women's tournament there, I mean, one of the complaints was lack of spectators, but I'm not surprised if it's in LA. Who the hell's going to watch it?
Well, it's not in LA.
Oh, right.
It is in California, though. It's San Diego.
Ah, that makes more sense.
Which does have a Major League Rugby team.
Well, it also has...
San Diego Legion.
Well, yes. And more to the point, they have one of the most famous clubs in American rugby, which is the Golden Gates.
You're thinking of the San Francisco.
What did you say? San Diego.
San Diego. Are you okay, Jay?
I'm not okay. I'm really not okay. Oh, right. So that's even more south.
So San Diego.
Right.
Who do have a Major League Rugby franchise in the San Diego Legion.
Yes.
Who are also in the news this week because Stefan Armitage has signed for them.
Ah. So actually, back to my point then about rugby towns. I can't imagine San Diego as much of a rugby town because, frankly, it's just a military base. And also, it doesn't strike me as a very wise move to play so close to the equator on what's going to be solid. I mean, those pitches are going to be absolute nightmares.
The pitches do look pretty scorched, pretty dusty.
Yeah.
I would have thought they must have some like good 4G pitches.
Definitely, just the high schools.
Well, the pitch that we played on in New Jersey,
yeah,
the high school pitch, was superb facilities.
Well, the pitch we walked past on the way to New Jersey was a superb bloody 3G pitch.
The facilities where the college football team was walking up, high school, not even college. Yeah,
they were baffled to see us there. It was completely empty.
Yeah.
I'd watched that whole thing, but you weren't keen.
Well, we had a game of rugby to play.
That is true.
You had to put me in for some tries.
We could have watched the first couple of quarters there and still got in time for our game.
We could have done. Yes, you're right.
Anyway, enough of that.
Enough of that, indeed.
So Stefan Armitage has gone to San Diego Legion?
Yes. Yeah, signing from next season. He's only 33. I think he's 34 at the end of the summer.
So was that Pau, was he? Stefan or Dylan?
Stefan.
The flanker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was at Pau, I think.
I think so, yeah. And Dylan was at... May still be at Lyon.
Yeah, he's definitely at Lyon because I think Stefan went to play under Carl Heyman. I don't know if he's still at Tyne.
He's not. There was
what happened?
A controversial. I'm not going to go into it because I can't remember the exact details.
No, please do.
No, because I can't.
No, please.
Well, do you want to guess the details?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Was it true that Carl Heyman went to?
If it's the details I'm thinking of, it's not worth guessing because it's not good. Let's finish the Carl Heyman discussion there.
Oh, really?
Really?
Oh.
Really?
No, I thought he was busted up in Edinburgh on mind altering party drugs with Tim Cocker and Will Greenwood.
And Will Greenwood.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, right. Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Oh, I think I do know what it is.
Yeah,
let's move on.
I've just read the headline from New Zealand stuff. Ex All Black Carl Heyman given suspended prison sentence for domestic violence in France.
Oh, what a scumbag.
Yep, let's end that there.
Yes, let's. Right.
There has been some other transfer news this week.
Okay, so the King of the North is already working for the King of the North. What else is there?
King of the North?
What? Steve Diamond?
Steve Diamond.
And the King of the North?
Mark Wilson,
Mark Wilson,
as widely reported.
I'm not. I'm just. I'm, Do you have a view on who is the rightful king of the North out of those two?
Mark Wilson.
It must be Dimes, right?
Mark Wilson.
Well, I don't know. Could there be two kings of the North?
Doesn't really work like that, does it?
Well, it does in Game of Thrones.
Not for long. You tend to get someone dead fairly shortly after there's two of anything.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy, actually, if they were both to be king of the North.
So there's that, which was widely reported. There's a bit of non-transfer news in Alan Wynne-Jones.
Oh, yeah, not moving.
Disappointingly, from some respects.
That's so disappointing. Although, I do kind of respect it because he's obviously got one eye. He needs to be playing for Wales to play for the Lions.
Correct, yes.
And that must be in his thinking.
Yeah.
Which is, it's simultaneously very cool and very, very ambitious. I love that. But he's also going to struggle with this thing, which I think that Warburton struggles with, which is his team have never done anything of any consequence. Well, not for a long time. In fairness, the Ospreys have done something like they have won things in the past.
Yeah.
I think they got into knockouts of Europe once and got...
that's not doing something.
Got knocked out by Leicester Tigers.
Ooh.
I'm pretty sure that was the last time that they did anything of note in Europe. Yeah. It'd be awesome to see Alan Wynne-Jones do well with Ospreys deep into Europe. That would be what I'd love to see. I just don't...
That won't happen. That's not going to happen.
But the signings, like Ainscombe, you know, they retain Alan Wynne.
Yeah,
you know, they do. They've got George North, Owen. What's his face? Williams? No, yeah. Like it's a pretty good first 15 when they're all available.
Yeah, when they're all available, but they don't have the depth. They don't have the experience over the last 10 years.
Yeah, you're right. You're all right.
So I'm kind of with you. I think on one hand, it's a bold and ambitious call because he is basically putting a marker down to say, I want to captain the Lions in two years' time.
Not a bad shot for it.
So I like that call. The opposite side is, I wish he'd have gone to England or France with a real chance of winning something.
Sale. There was talk.
Well, so...
I think there's talk of everywhere would have inquired.
Yeah. And he's such a leader, such an important player.
I wonder.
Anywhere he goes, he'll make that team better. I would have liked that ambition because let's just say he travelled to, I don't know, Saracens or Exeter or Clermont or Racing, one of those teams, and he is still playing for Wales. He's getting to Champions Cup semi-finals, finals. He's getting to top 14 or Premiership semi-finals, finals. He would still be... why would he not be in the equation for the Lions?
I just don't think it works like that.
The problem would be, if he goes to one of those, you are going to want your money's worth.
Well, it just doesn't work like that, does it? Because if you're ineligible for an international team, you can't go on Lions. Armitage was that exact question, wasn't it? Do they take Stephen Armitage? Because he wasn't available for England, he wasn't therefore available for the Lions.
I'm not sure that's right.
I'm pretty sure it is.
But... Who decides that?
Well, the Lions is owned by the four unions. So I guess the unions would have decided before that. Like, look, if he's not playing for us, he can't come along.
Hmm.
And you're outside of like a high performance environment in, you know, top level rugby. So that's probably got something to do with it.
Well, if he's at Saracens, he's in a pretty high performance environment.
Yeah.
I'm sure he could do Liam Williams.
Actually, what are we talking about? Because not only is he in a high performance environment, he's got more than enough caps to qualify.
Oh yeah,
so he's more than 60. He could do it.
Yeah.
How weird.
So I'm, but he wouldn't have got. Maybe Saracens is the one club that could have managed him to a degree.
Do you think you could sign a contract with a club, right? Do you think a club would do it where you basically said, "Look, I will play 15 games. I don't care which games they are, but you've only got me for 15 games. I'll come training every day, but 15 games. That's your lot."
I would have thought in a commercial negotiation you could do it.
Yeah. So the reason I ask that is because. Like George North's contract stipulated he could play for Wales, even outside of the window. And Premier Rugby said, no, you can't do that because it's not fair on all the other teams. You have to put out your strongest team and, you know, if the Welsh players are contracted to you, they're not allowed to be released for Wales. And I wonder if they'd pull something similar if Alan Wynne or anyone else said, look, I'm only here for 15 games. The Premiership would turn around and go, no. They're either playing for you or they're not.
Well, it's an interesting one. If it's not the conflict of internationals, as in, if teams just decide to manage their players and therefore they can write into the contract and get a discount effectively, I don't see how you could legislate against that.
I got no idea. But I'm sure
but it's the same. So all of the England, all of the EPS, they have restricted games. So it's same with the New Zealand, the centrally contracted New Zealand players. They have formally restricted games because they could only play, I can't remember the number, but say it was 12 games in Super Rugby this year. So yeah. Beauden Barrett had to be rested for 3 games.
Bloody hell.
Okay. Which does...
Sorry. Sorry just to interrupt and talk over you there. Well, am I sorry? Not really.
you weren't listening anyway. I could see.
Yeah, I'd switched off at some point. I've got something here which is pretty cool. Do you want to know about it?
Well, do you want to do the final bit of transfer news? Because I did while you were not listening, I did a lovely segue into the final bit of transfer news this week, which is Beauden Barrett.
Oh, yeah. Go on. Some Super Rugby transfer news.
Do you want to...
Please enlighten me. What's happened to Beauden Barrett?
Beauden Barrett's gone to the Blues.
And now, is that a big deal?
Yes, it's a massive deal.
Why?
Because he has been leading my beloved Hurricanes to multiple finals, Super Rugby semi-finals and finals, including winning the damn thing against the Lions 3 years ago, 4 years ago, before the Crusaders started their unstoppable dancing march.
Well, and then Crusaders fired Todd Blackadder. he wasn't fired, actually.
Until they let him go.
Winning.
So, and his partnership with...
TJ
Perenara inside him and Laumapi outside him is pretty amazing.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
It is shock news. It is certainly from what I've seen, a total surprise that he is gone to
now
the Blues.
As you're well aware, I know next to nothing about New Zealand rugby. I know less about New Zealand rugby than I do about Welsh rugby. How is this allowed to happen? Do the Blues control their own budget? I mean, I guess that they must do.
Well, the players are centrally contracted, but then all of the organisations do have their own budget. So
they must have put a lot of money into getting Beauden Barrett.
I would have thought so.
And also, I can't make the Hurricanes particularly happy.
No. It's a little bit like the Ospreys pinching Anscombe as well.
Yes,
you got kind of centrally contracted players. Are you okay, JB?
Yes, I'm fine. Sorry. although this is news which I picked up this week, talking about not knowing anything about Welsh rugby. Apparently, they're phasing central contracts out of Welsh rugby now.
Are they?
Apparently, that's what I read.
I thought this was like the master plan to keep everyone playing in Wales.
Well, nope, apparently not. Apparently, the master plan is just don't let them play for Wales.
Okay.
Or something like that. I don't know. Well,
the master plan, which won them the Six Nations this year, wasn't to do with Anscombe and Hadley Parks. It wasn't to do with their incredible Sean Edwards defensive structure. It was to do with the regions making them so miserable.
Exactly right, Phil.
Playing at the regions, at the clubs, that they were desperate, absolutely desperate to get out of that environment.
That hellhole, which is your club. Your miserable club.
So maybe this will just create even more uncertainty at club level. Therefore, they're even more motivated to play for Wales.
Maybe.
It might be a masterstroke.
Maybe that's exactly what
Gatland's final masterstroke to win the World Cup.
Good old Gatland.
Just back on the Blues for a second. So it is. So there's a similar thing, or possibly similar, when... So Jack McGrath has gone to Ulster.
Yep.
Which was a player/club led movement with a centrally contracted player.
Yeah.
But it was more as much led by the player as anything, because he had fallen behind Cian Healy. So he wasn't getting as much game time for either Leinster or Ireland, and he wanted to push for that number one shirt.
Yeah.
Now, Beauden Barrett moving to the Blues is totally different. Because,
100% different.
Because he is number one currently, although the pressure on him is enormous. And arguably, by going to the Blues, he is playing for a worse team.
Yep.
Therefore, he is actually more likely to have his starting spot taken by the, in sublime form, Richie Munger.
I mean,
so it's really interesting from that side.
I don't know anything about New Zealand, let alone New Zealand rugby, really. But from what I understand, New Zealand's like a little bit of a bigger version of Anglesey. And
with better cricketers.
With better cricket. Well, I don't know. I've never played cricket in Anglesey. But let's say it is, right? Yeah. Let's say it is. Is this him just moving maybe to the big city? Because Auckland is the big city in New Zealand. Is it a quality of life thing, I wonder? Because everyone likes to live, you know, in big... most people like to live in big cities, I'd assume. That's why they're big cities. Bloody expensive, though. Like, London-style expensive.
In what, in...
Auckland.
Auckland.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much... Because Wellington is the capital, isn't it?
It is.
But I don't know how much bigger Auckland is than Wellington.
Wellington, like, an administrative capital? Like
it might be
Canberra,
like Canberra.
And Washington is.
And Ottawa.
Yeah. Is Ottawa a capital of Canada?
I'm sure it is.
There you go.
Yeah, it may well be. But it's a very surprising from my side. I mean, it's not like the Blues don't have talent. They've got some very talented players. So, Marnoa and Sonny Bill Williams.
They're reasonable.
Are his likely centre partnership.
They are reasonable.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Marnoa has been talked up all year for getting back to the All Black squad.
Yes.
He's not yet made it back there, but he's a good player. I mean, they've got the best, in my opinion, the best outside back in the world in Rico Ioane.
Oh, yeah, fine.
They've got Augustine Pulu. They've got a few handy... Tuipulotu, the second row. So they've got a few handy players. But it's just... They are the fifth best, and have been for a while, the fifth best New Zealand team. So
I'm going to put it out there. I don't think this is... Now I'm kind of thinking it through. This doesn't sound like a bad move at all, really. Because you're moving to the big city, okay? You've just listed a bunch of players who are there now. If they want to go forward and they've got the right people, they're in a great position to do so. Beauden Barrett comes. That is like a huge we are open for business sign.
It is.
Come and join us. By the way, we've got Sonny Bill too.
Yeah. And Rico Ioane. Ioane is class. Absolutely
might not
class.
Be too bad at all.
And his brother, of course, Akira Ioane.
He was also at the Blues.
Also at the Blues. So, yeah. Watch this space. Right, we've banged on far too long about...
Before we move on, who's going to be flying off for Hurricanes then?
I'm trying to think of the lad's name. There's a young lad who's played a bit this season when Beauden Barrett has not been playing. We almost lost to the Sunwolves, I think, with him steering the ship. So,
ooh, fun times ahead then.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the best news for as a beloved Canes fan.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You poor thing, Phil.
I know.
Feel for you.
It's terrible. Anyway, that's all the big transfer news this week. The other two bits of news we've got on our agenda before we get into the predictions for next week. Ooh, the Super Series is just kicking off.
Excellent. What does the pitch look like?
I've not cut it up.
Right, okay, fine.
It's 9 o'clock. It was due to kick off. 9 o'clock UK time. Mm-hmm. So the other bit of news before the other two bits. So Premiership rugby fixtures were announced this week.
Yep.
Did you see the Chris Boyd mini snippet interview
it? And I wonder if you got that from Jamal Ford Robinson, actually.
Why?
Jamal Ford Robinson tweeted that before Chris Boyd said it.
Oh, really?
Unless Jamal Ford Robinson tweeted it after he watched Chris Boyd say it.
Possibly. Well, is Jamal Ford Robinson not now at
Gloucester? Yeah.
So, whichever way, the Chris Boyd one was quite funny. Well delivered. Well, we've looked at the table. It turns out we play every team twice, once home and once away.
But of course, he was wrong, wasn't he? So, he should have done a bit of a humble brag. It's said, unless you make the playoffs like we did
last year,
in which case we get to play Exeter three times. Lucky us.
Yeah. And the one thing you do know about the fixture list, every time they play Saracens will be straight after Saracens have just had an embarrassing defeat and they go and put 50 or 60 points on Northampton.
I think that's fair. I think that's very fair.
So the interesting bit about it, I need to stop saying interesting. Someone commented on Twitter about how often I say interesting.
Well, you find lots of... You've got a curious mind, Phil.
I do, you're right. You
find lots of things interesting. It's endearing.
Thank you. I also do say it when I don't know what else to say. When you tell me something about...
Hang on a minute.
about American politics, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. JV.
Oh, you've got a new train set. Interesting. Oh, fancy that.
So the other thing we should observe about the Premiership Rugby fixtures is, have you seen the date of the final?
No.
20th of June, 2020.
Oh, so it's quite far.
So it's a month after, which is, they are starting a month later, so it's not too surprising.
It is a bit silly, isn't it? It does feel a bit silly, I suppose.
Well, you're going to end up, so the England players will kick off their World Cup warm-up games in, I think it's about mid-August.
So
they will play from mid-August.
Yeah.
They'll play the World Cup, they'll play Premiership, they'll play Heineken Champions Cup rugby, they'll play Six Nations, they'll go back to Champions Cup, back to Premiership, finish that on the 20th of June, and then if you're lucky enough to be selected for the summer tour as well, you've got a three-match summer tour from July. So you'll start your season in August and finish it at the end of July. So it is a full 12 months. Now, the players will be getting managed in that, but it is a full 12 months of some brutal, brutal action.
The Premiership fixtures.
Yeah.
I want to make a few recommendations to Premier Rugby. Not they'll listen to me. Well, they should listen to me, actually. I mean, they really should. But I think the champions should always have the first game on the Friday night. Whoever the champions are, they always play at home on the Friday night. Or
like
maybe
it.
Do NFL and do it on Thursday night. I think Friday night is probably better.
Yeah.
And make a big song and dance about it.
Yep.
Also, the Premiership launch should be done at the home ground
the club.
Of the champions too.
Yeah.
So they do the Premiership launch. I don't know if that's the same thing as releasing the fixtures.
They normally do another, because there's the fixtures, but then they do a proper launch, which is normally at Twickenham, where they get all the captains together.
Yeah.
Or it's not always captains, actually. Sometimes it's kind of notable players.
Twickenham's boring. That's the thing about Twickenham. Anyway, it's fun. Sometimes it'll be fun for our live show. You can definitely go.
That will be fun.
That will be fun on 4th of September. Look,
7th of September.
Whatever it is. you know. Sign up for some...
Pull it together, JB.
Yeah, sign up for some tickets or some such thing. But it's not fun for everything. I mean, I'd much rather Allianz Park was used. And people say, oh, it's not for fans, it's for, you know, it's for journalists or whatnot. Well, make it for fans then. It's not, you know, it's not beyond your wits.
It would be good for the Saracens fans. And the Saracens, so at Rugby... At Saracens Rugby or Rugby Saracens
whichever
on Twitter... They've got a great little kind of community.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
Yeah, great little fan base. Interesting content as well.
Hopefully, I'll be invited again to the Sail Sharks summer barbecue, right? So they have two barbecues. They have one for the sponsors, and then the next day they have one for the fans. And they both pack out, and they pack out really, really easily. You're talking about hundreds of people all going on to Carrington, eat burgers, and watch the players train. Okay, it's a brilliant event. Now, imagine if Sale had won the Premiership. In fact, any team had won the Premiership. They hold the launch at their ground or at their training ground. It'd be a great event to invite school kids to and whatnot. Much, much better than just going to bloody Twickenham all the time. And they've chosen pride in it too.
Yeah.
I
could get on board with that.
So those are my two things. The Premiership launch is at the ground of the champions. The first game on that Friday night is always at the champions' place.
I like that.
Put some pyrotechnics in, they can do whatever they want. In fact, here's another little twist. Maybe the champions get to choose who they're going to beat first. You know, like the rendezvous club
call.
Yeah,
the club call.
Club call.
Now, on that, the...
Who do you choose for your opening game?
Probably London Irish this year.
Nah, that's boring. You would
call out Exeter.
Call out Exeter.
Exeter at home.
Yeah, come on, boys.
The problem with that is the opening weekend of Premier Rugby is mid October. And the majority of the Saracens and Exeter players will, of course, still be playing for England at the World Cup. Or maybe not, because they'll be on the way home at that stage.
That's a good point. They
just after, because the England's last group game against France is on the 12th of October.
My favourite part of major sporting tournaments isn't the sport. It's the stories of the people that assume they were going to get to the semi-final and book hotels. Oh, dear. Fills my heart with joy.
Right, final bit of news now.
Yep.
In a slow non-game news week, we're dragging this out, but did you see the World Rugby axial loading ban?
Right, okay. You mentioned this before the podcast to me, and you said axial loading's been banned.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Finally.
When will they get to grips with this axial loading problem? Well, we have an answer. They have got to grips with the axial loading. Now, let me point this out. I spoke about rugby on this podcast for, 5 years now. I coach twice a week. I have played well over two decades, and I have no idea what axial loading is, which means, does it need to be banned?
At the World Rugby law variation panel meeting a few weeks ago.
Oh my God, these guys.
That we discussed a little while ago.
Yeah.
This was one that was agreed would be an immediate law change. So rather than the other ones, which are like either for consultation or for limited trial, this is immediate worldwide ban on axial loading, JB.
So
no more axial loading.
I'm not even trying to play the idiot here. I mean, I might genuinely just be an idiot. I don't understand. I can't even guess what it is. Is it ruck based?
Nope.
I've got no idea. What is axial loading then?
So there's several places. So Rugby Pass got in New Zealand Rugby's chief scientist.
Oh my God.
And also former international front rower Mike Ross to explain what axial loading is. And after reading the World Rugby announcement, then reading this article and multiple other articles, I think I've got a gauge of roughly what it is.
Okay.
So when your scrum's set up,
right?
What is it? Crouch, bind, set.
Yeah, that's
now
correct.
Now are your three calls. On the bind call, what has apparently been happening, and there is some pictures to show this, is the hooker or one of the hookers, or sometimes both of the hookers, has been put in. So one hooker puts his head on the opposition hooker's shoulder, and all of the players behind him kind of set their weight forward.
That's correct.
So all of the player, all of their weight is going through your hooker's head onto the opposition hooker's shoulder.
Right. So someone will correct me here, but that's not how I understand it to work. Although I see what you're saying. Okay. Both hookers should have one of their feet down as their break foot.
Yeah.
And then the pressure comes through them. And when they lift that break foot, that then will engage the two packs and it will give you a little bit more oomph when you go in. So it's not necessarily on the shot on the head, but I could see the problem though if they're ear to ear and the hooker's head, top of the head, is on the shoulder of.
Yeah.
I can see that could be an issue.
So this is exactly what they're saying.
I mean, you'd have to be insane to want to try that.
That the head. So they're saying this is what is happening. Let's see if I can get this picture up. It's not a very good picture. So the only
picture, because it never happened.
The only pictures are the ones that aren't that don't really explain it. Anyway, that is what they're saying is happening. And then because you've got so much weight going through the neck of your own hooker, there's a danger there. But also because you're putting it through the shoulder of the opposition hooker, it's kind of misaligning the opposition. So it's so that your team can get the upper hand when it comes to it. I know it's not a true hit these days, but when you properly bind or when you set, it's so that your team gets the upper hand on that because the hooker and the tight head proper next to him are being disrupted. Their bind is being disrupted. So now they've changed it. So immediately if the ref spots it, it will be a penalty against.
I have no idea how you'd look for that.
So it's looking
at the picture.
It's making sure the idea is to make sure that that's the best picture that we've got.
This is
so it's the ref. So it will immediately penalise The
So it looks like he's using his head in this picture, right? In order to, yes, he is on the shoulder, but it seems like a nifty little way so you don't engage early.
There's probably an added benefit from that, but you are putting force through. So you can't now put your head on the opposition shoulder, whether you're putting force through it or not. It'll be a penalty, and same as any offence, repeat infringements can lead to a yellow card. So,
well, thank God there that's we go. Dealt with. I mean, yeah. There's not many scrums that I've looked at and thought, oh God, we need to sort out that
axial loading.
There we go.
There we
what
are.
You complained about that first. I even play front row, and I'm not particularly aware of it.
I imagine this is one that's not filtered down to that level yet.
Yeah,
it's probably
I imagine.
At the lower levels, you get very, very few, comparatively very few reset scrums.
Yeah, I'd say so. I will say this, though. If it's effective enough for the All Blacks to be trying, and you don't think they're going to pick up on it...
There we go.
Guess who's going to be axial loading next week?
Right. Rugby Championship.
Yep. So, anyway, normal day in the Beardmore household.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
And I found a package in my hallway.
Okay.
This. Check out this, mate.
What is that?
This is a shirt, and I'll tell you what it is. It's basically in quarter panels. There's a bit of green, there's a bit of white, and the bottom is yellow. It says "Best Wishes, Egg Chasers," obviously.
And a bit of black on there as well, black panelling.
Yep.
Suncorp, what are the two sponsors on the back? We've got Suncorp, mm-hmm. We've got, what are the other sponsors? Sorry, I can't see your laptops in the way. We've got
mates,
Domino's.
Mates. So... this was sent by our dear friend down under, Mick Ryan.
Awesome.
It is the classic Anzacs top.
Wow.
Exactly. So who played for the classic Anzacs, I hear you ask? Well, allow me to tell you. Matt Dunning, Jeremy Paul, Andrew Heath, Garrick Morgan. I've not heard that name for a long time. He's the ace. Let's see. Stephen Larkham. He used to be pretty
Larkham,
good.
Larkham, he was a fairly handy player.
Shane Drom. Shane Drom played for England. Shane Drom played, hang on, and he's at 11 as well. Shane Drom, we've been over the Shane drama before. Bristol, Northampton, Worcester, and England. One cap.
So when was this last played then, or when was this played?
That's a good question.
When was that shirt from, do you know?
Now you're asking. I have no idea. No idea. I like the shirt, though. Stephen Larkham, Nathan Gray, Chris Latham at 13, Anthony Saucer, Greg Martin. They are. Oh, Greg. No, I'm thinking of Greg Wallace. So pretty cool, eh?
Very cool. Nice shirt.
And they were this game they were playing, I'm just seeing if there's anyone you recognise, a British and Irish Lions 15. And the answer is you'd probably recognise all of them. I wonder...
So what British and Irish Lions was it?
Hang on a minute.
Name the team and let's see what year it was. So it's got to be 2001? So it'll be the 2001 tour.
Hang on a second, right? So, the British and Irish Lions, Robbie Russell, Mark Regan, Darren Morris, David Corker? Don't know. Cool. Rob Taylor, Lewis Moody, Trevor Brennan, Ben Clark, Ian Martin, don't know him, Craig Chalmers, Iosa, someone, sorry, Rob Henderson, Lee Davis, bloody hell, Derek Lee, and Ben Hinshelwood. That's quite a team. That's an amazing team. But yeah, there you go. And it's a mixture. It seems to be a mixture here of actual professionals and people that were in the army. So Rob Taylor was the Yorkshire Regiment, as was Ian Martin, as was Isoa. What a nice little mix that is.
Amazing. That is an awesome gift.
Yeah. So that will take pride of place in the rugby dungeon.
Next time we stream live on YouTube, look out for it in the dungeon.
Indeed.
We've got to take one of these down.
I can't possibly get rid of the Chris Robshaw one. The
Chris Robshaw one is so filthy because you wore it all the way back from London on a very hot day.
Yeah.
to do a reveal for me and Tim.
I think it's rather filthy because when we were moving in here into this studio, I left it on the floor for quite a long time. And let's face it, I mean, it's about as valuable as the book entitled House of Lancaster. Now, I was at Sale Sharks this weekend. This week.
This week. You're always at Sale Sharks.
Yeah, but...
Tell me something new.
Well, okay, so it was quite interesting because I went there just, to nose about, effectively. Had a lovely conversation with the social media people. But I also spent a lot of time with Neil Briggs, who is the Academy Transition Manager. Now, the reason that I bring this up is because all the Sharks were out. They were marching up Snowdon, doing some team building, which allowed the Sale Academy staff to pick my brains on various rugby bits.
But on were they asking you about axial loading?
They were asking about all that. But the reason that I bring it up is because it's the first time really I've had the chance to really talk about academy rugby. I didn't realise what went into it, and the amount of detail and planning and welfare actually that goes into looking after the academy lads at Sale is truly staggering. So we had a good hour's chat about it. And their season, right, is planned out for all of the games they are expected to play from pre-season all the way through the Champions Cup, international breaks, and then till the end of the season. It is absolutely amazing.
Is that the same for all clubs, do you think? Or is that is it unique?
They have definitely, over the last couple of years, put more resources into the academy. And the other thing which impressed me as well is the journey that the academy lads go on, which very much involves the parents too. And the way that they explain it, which is like, look, you are here, and then, if you progress to this stage, then you'll get some team appearances. After your first team appearances, you'll reach a certain benchmark, and then you'll become a first team squad member, so on and so forth. So they plan it out as to exactly how a successful career develops. And it's just quite good the way that they go through it with the parents too, in order to, everyone knows exactly what they're getting into.
But on that, if everyone knows exactly what good looks like, then if you are starting to miss those targets...
Well, that's exactly the point, okay? So I don't think that rugby... I mean, rugby, you've got to be very careful. And we should do a podcast on this, because I've got some really good graphs on, like, how players get paid. And it'd be worth talking about the personal finances of how players organise themselves. But you have to make a decision. Is this game going to be worthwhile for the player? And that's a decision that the parents are going to have to make, because the sacrifices that you've got to put into it are enormous.
Oh, massive, yeah. Yeah. That is a good thing to be doing, to be setting those kind of parameters up early on.
Yeah, because I guess the other thing is, you expect as soon as you've got the Sale Sharks badge on that, it's a one-way ticket to success, but it's not. There must be 100-odd lads that go through Sale's doors every week. Of them, only a few are ever going to see the first team.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. So it's good for you to offer something back to Sale Sharks as well. Exactly. Your expertise.
Yeah, I think they really gained a lot from
having Yeah. One other thing before we do the previews for next week. Did you read the Tony Rowe interview in the Rugby Paper last weekend?
I believe I saw some snippets of it. Did he say a few controversial things?
He was very outspoken. Very outspoken in his dislike of Eddie Jones.
Oh, excellent.
So he's very much on your page. Yeah. I'll read a couple of snippets here. So one of the questions, you're not a fan of Eddie Jones then? Mm-hmm. No, he's a strange guy who's made some strange comments about our game and the way we play.
I agree with him.
So, and then another question. So what if Eddie Jones bombs at the World Cup and England come calling for Rob Baxter? Tony Rowe's response, you said if he bombs, but I've no doubt that he will.
I'm with him.
I don't think we're strong enough. I can't see us getting to the final, so Eddie Jones may go. But I'm fairly confident that Rob, even if he had the conversation, wouldn't be tempted away. And then he also mentioned, I can't find the quote here, about England pinching or stealing their players, which was an interesting one.
Stealing their players? What does that mean?
As in, he doesn't have his full squad guys. It came across like he was a little bit sour grapes about players that they've kind of brought through the academy, go on to play for England, and then either pick up an injury or aren't fully available, for whatever reason, aren't fully available for Exeter for the full season. Which is, it's kind of the opposite mentality of Mark McCall when he said, we want all of our players, when he was talking about Will Skelton and Alex Goode and others.
Yeah.
So he said, we want all of our players available.
DOR's all about that. And you won't believe this. I'm going to reference back my experience with Sale Sharks.
Standard.
Yeah, you won't believe it, right? But Steve Diamond says the same thing. He says, we want as many of our players playing international as possible. I don't believe him because I know how well planned their season is. So if Jonathan Ross, for instance, got picked for England.
Or South Africa.
Or South Africa. Don't discount that. That, to me, does not sound like a great deal for Sale because they are so particular about when their players play and keeping everyone fit. And if they're coming back from internationals not fit or injured, that's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah.
And Exeter will be no less detailed than Sale Sharks.
Well, Sale, there are two positions where they can afford players to play, certainly now, would be back row and back three.
Yeah.
Because if, say, Ashton and Denny get called up, you've got, like, next cab off the rank.
Yeah.
Like, you've got the strength and depth there. If it was, say, certainly a couple of seasons ago, Ross Harrison starts getting called up for England.
Oh, good God.
And he's played 80 minutes week in, week out as their by far their best loose head and so integral, then that would be an issue.
It'd be a huge issue.
Yeah.
Let's just carry on talking about Sale for a second. James O'Connor. Me and Tim spoke about this, but it probably leads quite nicely into the championship or whatever that's called.
TRC.
Yeah. Are you excited by James O'Connor returning to Australia?
I'm excited by some of the potential headlines. either him going AWOL, as he has been known to in the past, or him trying to get the Australian rugby team, Taniela Tupu, for example, into
sticks before games and that sort of
thing. Yeah, the woke breathing routine, that kind of stuff. That sounds quite interesting. That sounds quite fun.
Yes, he's a good player. He's got good feet.
Are his feet as good as they were?
Wouldn't you? You would struggle to look back at his performances for Sale and say, yeah, that's a truly international class player who we desperately need to see in a World Cup. Is that harsh?
Well, you are normally the biggest fan of Sale players, so if you're saying it...
He has had a few tremendous games, but very infrequent.
I certainly don't disagree with what you're saying. He's done some nice things. He has not looked like a world-beating talent.
No, he's not looked like the James O'Connor from, say...
2013, even before that.
Yeah, like the one that London Irish was amazing. And I'm sure he is very good when he's fit. But I guess you'd be looking at him to replace Israel Folau, maybe?
Well, no, he's played a lot of his rugby more recently in the centre, hasn't he?
Which is funny because, originally we were told... Unconditionally, he's not a centre. He is not a centre. He's here to play outside back or 10. He wants to play 10. I don't see him playing 10 for Australia.
No.
And maybe he moves out to 12, but he's not a very big man.
No, and he doesn't have...
He is ferociously strong, though.
He doesn't have the pace. Oh, I don't think of him as having the pace anymore to be really an outside back.
No, he's got tremendous...
I know he has played 10 through 15 for Australia. In the past.
He seems like...
But he's not played for them since 2013. He's not played international rugby for 6 years.
I know. It strikes me as the most Australian solution to an Australian problem, which is, look, we've got a generic, a generic hole in our backs. What have you got for us? Oh, well, here's a generic back without a true position. And how many of these guys can you have? I mean, Curtly Beale just then goes back to 15, I guess. And
he's an obvious... Or you could put Reece Hodge back there, or you've got Dane Haylett-Petty... So they've got options. Or is it Banks who's been playing for the Brumbies and playing well?
Mm.
I want to say Marty Banks, but it's not Marty Banks because that's easier. But there is the young 15 who's been playing for the Brumbies is playing well. So you've got options there at 15. So I can't see it being that. Part of it struck me as Checker trying to repeat history. And the reason I say that is because prior to the 2015 World Cup, he brought back a few kind of key individuals from Europe. So Gitto, Drew Mitchell, Dean Mum, Sakopi Kepu, all came back into that squad. I think Kepu had been in and out and in and out, but the others, they came back in for the leadership, for the experience, and they made the World Cup final on the back of those guys playing awesome. Now, I don't see James O'Connor in the past, or certainly not now, being the same calibre as those other individuals.
I don't know. So, I think it's a risk, because, yes, he's a reinvented man. I'm not sure how much I want peace, harmony and love entering the training camp. Maybe I do, maybe I don't.
But, yeah. I mean, the guy that I really wanted to be in the Australian team, or would have if I was Australian, and I did for him.
Nick White.
Well, he's a good one, actually, to come back from Europe.
Nick White would be class.
But the other one who's come back from Europe, admittedly, a couple of seasons ago, and who's been playing brilliantly, and I said it a few weeks ago, is Christian Lilofano.
Yes.
Who, his leadership for the Brumbies, his control, his composure, his experiences both away playing at Ulster, but also his experiences outside of the game and his recovery from leukemia. I think he is exactly the kind of guy you want in that squad. He's a leader. He's such a good all-round player, and he will give something to a team that no other team has. So, and that kind of grit and determination is something that the Australian team could really do with.
Yes, I completely agree with that. Anyway, we might even get to see him play this weekend.
I think from what I read, he was in the kind of wider squad rather than the playing
that
squad.
Correct,
he's
yeah.
training with the squad. So maybe not. Did you see the other news on the Rugby Championship?
Let's go with no for now.
Coming out of Joburg.
Go on.
Taniela Tupu, the Tongan Thor, 135 kg,
I'm aware of it.
Tight head prop, got mugged.
What?
And this is not a Matthew Bastereau mugging.
Who'd do that?
He actually got mugged. He's walking back. He said they went, the front row went for dinner across the road from the hotel in Joburg, and were walking back, and someone grabbed his phone, ran across the road, jumped into a car and sped off.
More robbed than mugged then?
Yeah, some of the headlines were robbed, some of the headlines were mugged.
Yeah, but doesn't really sound like a mugging.
Well, he's had something stolen from him, hasn't he?
Yeah. Oh dear.
So, he's okay though. He got minor cuts to his arm.
Christ, so maybe it wasn't more of a mugging then?
Well, I think it was minor cuts to his arm trying to get it back from a moving car.
Crikey. You rob a phone from that guy.
I know. I mean, well, it's the front row, so yeah. If the guy ran across the road, so
what kind of phone was it? I mean, there's more questions than answers here.
Phones are pretty much useless anyway because they're all locked.
I think if you're in the business of stealing phones, though, you probably know a way around this.
Maybe.
So I lost my S8 in Madrid before our live show. I know exactly the group of guys that stole it to. I'm pretty sure that I did. Who knows? but you know, if you're into stealing phones, you know how
you probably
to,
know.
Yeah, or well, you know a guy.
They might be trying to extract the rare earth metals from it and sell them on.
Well, exactly right, Phil. Exactly right.
Or stock them for years at a time, but, and then in 50 years' time, your lithium from the battery might be worth 100 times what it is now.
That's a very good idea. Well,
they're effectively commodity traders.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, right? In this case, it went okay because it got in a car and sped off. But you only need to make one mistake.
I know. Yeah. With the Australian front row.
Yeah. It's not like, it's not a great idea. Good luck to them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a dangerous game.
They pulled it off, but next time, you're not the front rowers.
So, after teasing you with some previews for most of this pod, while we would talk around various different things, the previews for next week. So we've got in Joburg, South Africa hosts Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got in Buenos Aires, Argentina host a slightly depleted New Zealand team.
Okay.
Where's your money, Jay?
South Africa to win, and give me Argentina based on nothing more than they need to win if they're going to be serious competition for England. So, yeah.
So, I might be with you. I think South Africa probably will win. Australia have got more than enough problems on and off the field, but they've got plenty of problems. So, and South Africa are timing their World Cup run nicely. And Argentina and New Zealand is an interesting one because the Argentina team is going to contain a lot of the players that were beaten Or I imagine they will. They might rest. Yeah. They might rest them, but there'll be a number of players with points to prove from a couple of weekends ago. The Jaguars were a little bit unlucky in that game. They created chances. I know you spoke about it briefly last week. They created some brilliant chances, and in drier conditions, they would have scored. I mean, was it Maroney and Buffelli? He got basically over the line twice and couldn't get the ball down. If you convert those two, it's a different story.
I felt that the All Blacks, call them the All Blacks.
Basically, the All Blacks.
They just worked out what to do. The defence second half was unbelievably good.
And the conditions helped them in that. The conditions did help them in that. Argentina have got a point to prove. And none of the Crusaders who played in that game have travelled with the New Zealand squad. So
I wonder how many of the Jaguars will play them. Maybe they're rested too.
It might actually be sensible to rest them, because bear in mind, they've done, I don't know how many, multiple thousands of miles. They've done, let's just say, between 5 and 10,000 miles on that round trip from Buenos Aires to Christchurch and back 2 weeks ago. It might be sensible for them not to play in that one.
I wonder how much that's going to play into the World Cup, you know. The sheer comfort they have with travelling and being away from home.
Yeah.
Whereas England, not so much. France, definitely not.
No, France not at all. None of the European clubs, really. They stay one night before the game. They don't do three-week tours routinely. They do it once a year if they're lucky.
Would you like to go on a three-week tour?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would as well.
Yeah, that'd be good. Good fun. Awesome. Coffee with the boys every day.
Coffee with the boys every day. You go to some really cool places.
Yeah.
Mind you, I bet it's a bit of a pain. I wonder how the training works. I wonder if you have to be hosted by... Because if you think about it, you're there for the same competition. So if you're the Jaguars doing a three-week tour of, for instance, Australia, I wonder if the Australians have to host you out there.
There'll be facilities put up, won't there? I wouldn't have thought they'd share the same training ground, but it might be they might, if they're in Melbourne, they might use the Melbourne Storms training ground, the rugby league equivalent.
Should really find out more about that.
Well, we've got a three-week tour coming up, tour coming up to Japan. So, we'll get to find out.
Exactly right.
What training facilities are we going to be using? We're doing a lot of spars.
We are doing a lot of spars. We're going to watch the USA train. I'm convinced that we should do that.
Yeah, I'd be keen to do that.
I'd like to do that more than once.
Yeah, I'm sure we can arrange that.
I think we've covered everything. Shall we go home?
I think we've more than covered everything. Let's go home, and I'm going to re-watch the highlights of the cricket, just so I can savour it again.
Goodness me, yes, not a bad shout. Okay, so before we go, remember, go to Akuma Rugby Shops, because if you buy one of our wonderful merino wool tops there, you should get, one of our amazing Egg Chasers club ties, one of the originals. There's only a limited amount left, so once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
I don't even think you can buy the ties now.
I'm not even sure. I'm just thinking about my tie rack. I've not seen my Egg Chasers tie for a while.
I have kept a small stock just in case you and I need an extra one.
So go to akumashops.com/eggchasers.
Yep.
Also, go to podcastlive.com to pick up your tickets.
Oh, about the terrible news.
No.
The awful news.
No.
Yeah, terrible news.
Terrible news.
Yeah, the Rook podcast has pulled out.
The Rook has pulled out. Stephen Jones.
Yeah, Stephen Jones has pulled out.
Was it him or his people that pulled them out?
Good question. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's anything to do with ticket sales, but I do know the ticket sales numbers, and it would make a compelling argument why they shouldn't be there. But they have pulled out, and it's a real, real shame.
I was looking forward to seeing Stephen again.
I was as well.
Having a few drinks with him.
Exactly. So, yeah, they just couldn't get anyone to go and watch them, I guess. So,
but we will be there. Brian Moore will be there. Will Greenwood will be there.
Yeah.
But more importantly, we will be there.
We will be there. And as soon as we've done that, I think we will go for a few drinks in Richmond.
100%
so
we will.
So come for a few drinks in Richmond as well, and I don't know, talk about whatever you want.
So it's on the 7th of September 2019. Your tickets can be purchased now from podcastlive.com. We'll have a great time. JB will be celebrating his JB 2020 campaign.
Well, it might have to be 2021. But
2021 campaign.
Whichever one it is.
His upcoming election campaign.
That. We'll have some Negronis. We'll have some, you know, generic banter.
There'll be some banter.
There'll be some pretty standard stuff from me when I'll tell you what's going to be on my podcast. No, I'm going to be telling you how England won't qualify for the group stage, just regardless of any evidence that pops up between now and when they play.
You will be spouting verbatim what Tony Rowe has said about Eddie Jones as well.
Tim will be talking about free speech. What will you be talking about?
Tim will also be talking about the cesspit of Twitter.
Yep. We'll have that.
And he might be talking about his mind-altering party drugs from his festival this weekend. I hope he comes back alive.
Yep.
I'll be finding everything interesting, of course.
Of course.
And trying to keep you on the straight and narrow when we're talking about...
Oh, and I'll have some great Cell Sharks anecdotes.
Of course. I'll be trying to stop you from rolling your eyes every time I mention Super Rugby.
I mean, it'd be like all our other podcasts, but we'll be in Twickenham.
The one disappointing thing, which we do need to correct... So we did mention on a pod a couple of weeks ago that England are playing, I think it's Italy, the night before. They are playing Italy, however it's at St. James's Park up in Newcastle the night before.
Yeah.
So you could do both games. It's a bit of a trek.
They might even watch the game in Richmond.
We might do.
On TV.
If we're going to travel down on the Friday night, TBC. We'll let you know nearer the time.
Yep. All be good fun.
Absolutely. Right. I want to go home and watch the cricket again.
Righto. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.